Okay, good evening, everyone. First of all, I just really want to thank everyone for coming. I know that this is an incredibly hectic time of year, so I'm not sure if you came out for the Torah or just an excuse to get away from the kitchen a little bit, but either way, a real shkoach for coming. Our shir tonight is dedicated in the merit of a refuah shleima for Rachel Minkov, by the Bayless family, Verdin Rafi Lefkowitz, John Minkov, Sen Minkov, Stephen and Barbara Sharp, and we should hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, Rachel's treatment should be successful, and she should experience a complete and enduring refuah shalema.
Amen.
So we begin with number one. Amar Rava, Matzah Bizman Hazed Do'oraisa, Umarad Rabbanon. So the Gemara here, we'll begin with a little bit of halacha. So the Gemara Rava says, matzah, in today's day and age, presently matzah is d'oraisa, is a biblical obligation, umarer d'rabbanon. But the obligation to eat the bitter herbs is rabbinic in nature. Asks the Gemara, umayishna maror, so why should maror be any different than matzah? Right? Again, normally we assume that matzah and maror kind of are part of one big Pesach family. So therefore, if matzah is going to be d'oraisa biblical in nature, then maror should be as well. So what's the difference? To which the Gemara says, d'chsiv amatzos umerorim, bizman de'ika Pesach, yesh maror, ubizman de'leka Pesach, leka maror, to which the Gemara says, well, the Torah links the maror with the Karban Pesach. Amatzos umerorim yochluhu, you shall eat the Paschal offering, with matzah and maror, because the Torah links maror with the Karban Pesach, Rava therefore says, when there is a Paschal offering, when there is a Karban Pesach, then there is a biblical obligation for maror. But in the absence of the Paschal lamb, in the absence of the Karban Pesach, there is only a rabbinic obligation for maror. What's the problem?
The
Torah says the same thing by matzah. If that's going to be your argument, then matzah should be rabbinic as well. After all, the Torah says, "Al matzos umirorim yochlu." Torah says, "You shall eat the Karban Pesach with matzah and maror." So if you're going to tell me that maror is only biblical when there's a Karban Pesach, so too matzah shall only be biblical when there is a Paschal offering. To which the Gemara says, asks that question, "Umatzah nami haksiv al matzos umirorim." Aye, but it also, but what about by matzah? Using that same logic, matzah should be rabbinic as well. Matzah mehadar hadar bekra. So the Gemara answers that the Torah goes back and once again specifies the obligation for matzah. Dichsiv ba'erev tochlu matzos. The Torah explicitly says, in the evening you shall eat matzah. In other words, what the Gemara is saying is that when it comes to maror, the obligation to eat bitter herbs, is mentioned only once. And the one time it is mentioned in conjunction and in connection with the Karban Pesach. Therefore, the Gemara says that essentially, maror, the bitter herbs, Karban Pesach, the Paschal lamb, are linked at the halachic hip. If there is an obligation for Karban Pesach, then there's an obligation for maror. No obligation for Karban Pesach, there will not be a biblical obligation for maror, but only a rabbinic obligation for maror. Matzah, on the other hand, as much as it is discussed in the same context as maror, it is also stated individually. It is also spoken about as a separate entity. So because the Torah goes out of its way to teach us about the obligation of matzah, therefore again the Gemara understands it is a separate mitzvah independent of Karban Pesach and is a biblical obligation even when there is no Karban Pesach. Now we go to number two. With this backdrop, here's what we have, and this is very important for us. So we have again our matzah today, which is a biblical obligation. Again, matzah is a biblical obligation. Maror is rabbinic. Now why is this important? Because one should make sure to eat the correct amount of matzah, which is no easy task, on Pesach night, because at the end of the day, that is the one biblical obligation we have on the Leil HaSeder. Not that we treat the rabbinic obligation lightly, but again, just to know the one remaining biblical mitzvah we have on the Leil HaSeder is matzah. The four cups of wine, obviously, are rabbinic. The bitter herbs, the maror, are rabbinic. Matzah is our last remaining biblical mitzvah. The Gemara then goes on in number two and says the following. Disanya, and this is really going to be the bulk of our shir tonight. Disanya amru alav al hillel, shahaya karchan bevas achos va'ochlan. So the Gemara says, they say about Hillel, the great sage Hillel, right? We often know Hillel in the context of his ongoing dispute between Hillel and Shammai. So they say about Hillel that he used to karcha. Now karcha means what? Right, roll, wrap. Right, karchan, shahaya karchan bevas achaz va'ochlan. Hillel would take his matzah, would take his maror, would take his karban pasach, and what would he do? He would wrap them all together. Rav Soloveitchik, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, says, you see from here, that in the times of the Gemara, matzah was, forget about round, matzah was soft. Matzah was soft. In fact, Hillel was probably the first one to come up with a wrap, right? Karban Pesach wrap. Just very interesting. See, he says, that's Rav Soloveitchik points out, that it must have been the Lashon, because otherwise, there are other words for sandwiches. There are other words for a sandwich. We call this Korich sandwich. But clearly says Rav Bizman Gemara, they had soft matzos, and Hillel would take his matzah, wrap it around his paschal lamb, along with the bitter herbs, and would eat it like that. Shene Emar, now where did Hillel get this practice from? Shene Emar, where did he get the matzah from? Right, that's the better question. Okay. You can imagine how much that is a pound. Right? That's Shene Emar, Amatzos Umurorim Yochlu. Now, why does Hillel, now where did Hillel get this from? Because Hillel understood the verse, Amatzos Umurorim Yochluhu, to mean that in order to fulfill the obligations of the evening, you must actually eat all of these food items together, not one after the other, not in some kind of like clumsy sandwich that we make at the Seder, but you actually have to eat them together in one sitting. So you take his matzah, wrap it around his Korban Pesach, wrap it around his maror, and eat it all together. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Cholkin Alav Chaver Rav Hillel. But Hillel's contemporaries, Hillel's peers, disputed his interpretation of the verse. Disanya, Yochel Yehei Karchan Bevas Achaz Va'ochlan Kederach Sha'ahilal Ochlan. So the other rabbi said, you might have thought that perhaps you're supposed to eat everything together, wrapping the matzah around everything and eating it all at once. Tamud Lomar Al Matzos Umirorim Yochluhu. The rabbis understand the pasuk to really be read almost as a progression. Not that you eat it all together, but al matzos, you eat matzah, you eat maror, and you eat your karban pesach. Afilu zebifnei atzmo vezebifnei atzmo. You could even eat each one individually. Apparently, Hillel felt that the only way to discharge your biblical obligation on the night of the Seder was to eat it together. Meaning, according to Hillel, if you ate your matzah, and then you ate your maror, and then you ate your paschal lamb, you did not fulfill your obligations for the night. The rabbis disagreed and said, okay, Hillel, even if we say that your sandwich might be a good solution to eating everything together, that is certainly not the halachic obligation. If you choose to eat it as a sandwich, that's fine, but you could just as easily eat it separately as well. Maskif l'Rav Ashi, so if we skip down a little bit, he says, if you look at the last three lines of number two, Hashta dilo itmar hilchasa lo kihilel velo kirabana. Now here's what's interesting. The Gemara doesn't come to a conclusion. So it's like the Gemara says, and the halacha follows Hillel, or the halacha follows the Rabbanan. The Gemara actually ends in a very open-ended fashion. Doesn't tell us who is correct. So the Gemara actually ends with a very striking conclusion. Now that we did not decide who the halacha is according to, mevarech al achilas matzah va'achil, you make your bracha on matzah and you eat it, v'hadr mevarech al achilas maror va'achil, then you make your bracha on the maror and you eat it, v'hadr achil matzah, and then what do? You eat your matzah. Chasa is what? Lettuce. Just as a very important aside, you know, those who are use horseradish for the Leil HaSeder, as much as it's certainly an incredible testament to one's endurance, but it's very difficult to go ahead and really eat the requisite amount of horseradish. One should just be aware that, in fact, according to many poskim, lettuce is the preferred maror. The preferred maror. And Rav Moshe Feinstein goes so far to say that the most preferred maror is actually iceberg lettuce. To use regular iceberg lettuce, one doesn't have to worry about bugs, because romaine lettuce has issues with bugs. One could use romaine lettuce. It's not bitter. Rav Moshe writes, it doesn't have to be bitter. The point of maror is that it lacks any kind of good taste. All right, that's just an aside. So look how the Gemara says, and then you put your matzah and your lettuce together. Below bracha, you don't make a blessing on that. Rather, what do you say? Zecher lemikdash ke. Hillel. We are doing this as a commemoration of what Hillel did during the times of the temple. So interestingly enough, if I were to ask you, although the Gemara says that the halacha, or that the Gemara doesn't decide who the halacha goes according to, in reality, the Gemara kind of did decide who is the right opinion. Who is the right opinion according to the conclusion of the Gemara? All right, Baruch Hashem. So we've got Hillel, Rabbanon, both. All right, we've covered all the bases. What would you say? The Rabbanon. The Rabbanon, why? What's the proof to that? Brachas. Because look what the Gemara says. You eat your matzah and make a bracha. You eat your maror and make a bracha. And obviously this is being written post-Second Temple, so there's no longer a discussion about the Karban Pesach. But had it been written in the times of the Temple, it would have said, eat your matzah, make a bracha, maror, make a bracha, Karban Pesach, make a bracha. And then, once you've discharged your obligations, so make your Hillel sandwich. But it seems to be, although the Gemara doesn't say it explicitly, the Gemara seems to side with the positions of the Rabbanon, which by definition means rejecting the position of Hillel, but says, but you could kind of also, you could give Hillel a little shmir, you know, by going ahead and eat his sandwich in commemoration to what he did on the night of the Seder. And in fact, if we go to number three, we do this, right? Remember, our progression. We go ahead, we eat our matzah, we eat our matzah, we make our bracha of al achilas matzah in addition to hamotzi. We eat our maror, al achilas maror, and then what do? Then we look at number three. Korech zecher lemikdash kila. We lift up our sandwich. We say, do we do this in Kain osa hilo beznash beisamidish hayakayom? We are recreating or paying homage to that which Hillel did during the times of the temple. Haya korech pesach matzo umaror v'ochal biyachod lekayim mashe ne'emar amatzos umarorim yoch luhu. Now, if you take a step back, like we always say, in order to truly appreciate anything in Judaism, you kind of have to forget a little bit anything you've learned beforehand and approach it as that tabla rasa, approach it as that blank slate. So if you were to look at this section of the Haggadah, it's incredibly strange. Here, the Gemara has de facto ruled like the Rabbanon. The Gemara said the Rabbanon are right. Eat your matzah, make a bracha. Eat your maror, make a bracha. If there's a Karban Pesach, eat your Karban Pesach, make a bracha. So if in essence the position of Hillel is rejected, lahalacha, practically speaking, why do we feel the need to incorporate Hillel's Korech sandwich into the Seder? Again, one more time, if it is rejected halachically, why the need to build it into the Pesach night Seder experience? That's going to be the question that we're going to try to deal with today. The obvious answer is that there must be some deeper symbolism in Hillel's Korech that makes it an absolutely necessary part of the Pesach Seder. So, if time permitting, we're going to try to give four different approaches to understanding the symbolism and the real magnitude of Hillel's Korech. We begin with number four. So we begin with the Gra, the Vilna Gaon. I include a little biography here. The Vilna Gaon, see, so just in general, the Vilna Gaon's style in writing is incredibly terse and succinct. The Vilna Gaon gives a lot of credit to the reader. He assumes that we're going to figure out what he meant. Now, thank God there are commentaries on the Vilna Gaon, who therefore take the words of the Gaon and translate it for regular people like us. His commentary on the Haggadah is a little bit more verbose for Vilna Gaon standards. So he quotes the Yerushalmi. He quotes a Mishnah from the Jerusalem Talmud. If you look in the left-hand paragraph, a Mishnah in Meseches Challah. Hillel hazokin, hayakorich shloshtan ka'achas. Hillel would take these three things, the Karban Pesach, the Matzah, and the Mar, he would roll it all together. Perish Pesach Matzah Mar, v'ochlin ka'achas. He would eat it at once. V'hayimakayim ke'echad achilas Pesach, v'achilas Matzah, v'achilas Maror. And he would go ahead and simultaneously discharge all of the obligations of the night, all the biblical obligations of the night. Because remember, in the times of the temple, as we just saw in number one, maror is biblical as well. See, we discharge all the biblical obligations at once. Now look what the Gra says, and here's the most important line. V'savar she'ein mevatlin ze et ze. And Hillel held what? And one did not negate the other. Or in other words, what Hillel seems to feel, now the one against the other is a little bit difficult to know because we're talking about three things here, right? So in reality, if we look at the three things, perhaps we could assume that what the Gra is trying to highlight is, really you have two categories. You have Matzah and Pesach, and you have Maror. So it seems to be the Gra saying that Hillel felt you could eat it all together, because even though you're going to eat it all together, one does not cancel out the other. V'amar Rabbi Yochanan, go on in the Gra. And Rabbi Yochanan said, "Kalukin al Hillel azokin." Hillel's peers disputed his approach. Perish, the Rabbanan cholkin. I love the rabbis disagreed. V'savri, because they held shemevatlin ze et ze. The Rabbanan, on the other hand, felt that no, you can't eat them together. Why? Because they will cancel each other out. Now, on a simple level, what's going on over here? On the basic pshat, on the basic approach, what are they arguing about? It's good, the bracha, very true. What else? What about in terms of the words mevatlin zeze? Okay, importance. Taste. On the basic level, and let's start backwards, the Rabbanan will say, you can't be yotzei maror like that. You can't discharge your obligation of maror when you're having it with a lamb chop. Why? Right, sounds delicious, right? That's exactly the problem, right? You're blunting the bitterness of the maror, which thereby negates the entire essence of this mitzvah. Remember, the whole place of maror is to go ahead and highlight the bitterness of Egyptian servitude. Now you're putting it into your Karban Pesach wrap and say the Rabbanan, mevatlin zezeh. You've totally negated the maror. On the other hand, apparently, Hillel doesn't seem to have such a problem. I mean, Hillel can't argue. He can't say, no, that's not true. It's objectively true. By including the maror with these other items, you are blunting the bitterness of the maror. But for some reason, Hillel doesn't seem to be concerned with that. Now, there are two ways that we could understand this idea of the Gra, a mevatlin ze et ze, about what they're arguing about. The first approach is, if you take a look at number 5, again, 5 and 6 are going to be approaches in 4. We're going to have two different understandings of perhaps what the Vilna Gaon means. So if you take a look at number 5, this I quoted from this Haggadah last week as well. This is from Rabbi Jonathan Sachs, an excellent Haggadah. So he writes the following. It appears that there was a difference of opinion between Hillel and his contemporaries as to whether the matzah and maror should be eaten separately or together. The view that they should be eaten separately holds that these are distinctive commands, neither of which should diminish or detract from the other. Matzah symbolizes freedom. Maror represents slavery. So on one hand, writes Rabbi Sachs, you can't say the Rabbanan, you can't have them together. Why? Because they represent two different things. You know, it's almost like the Sefer Achinuch brings down one of the esoteric mitzvahs we have is that you're not allowed to cook or to eat or to get benefit from a milk and meat mixture. Right now, generally, we assume that this mitzvah is what we call a chok. A chok means a mitzvah without any kind of understandable reason. That's what we assume. But interestingly enough, the Sefer Achinuch writes, he says there is a reason. Actually, I'm sorry, that's the Maharal. He says meat is a result of death. Right? You only get meat when you kill. Yet milk is what? Life-sustaining. So the Maharal says, you can't mix the forces of life and death in this world. A very esoteric approach. So here, says Rabbi Sachs, is echoing a very similar sentiment. So the Rabbanan will say, you can't take freedom and slavery and mix them together. You're not allowed to do that. Those are two opposing ideas and ideals. Therefore, you can't mix them. Furthermore, they have different tastes, as we mentioned before. They are opposite experiences. They do not belong together. So according to Rabbi Sachs, the mevatlin zed, that phrase, that's the phrase of the Gra that we're focusing on. That the Rabbanan said you can't eat matzah, maror, and Pesach together because they negate one another. So on one hand, there is on the ideological level. Matzah and Pesach represent freedom. Maror represents servitude. And those are two parallel and different experiences that cannot be mixed. Therefore, you must eat them separately. Furthermore, if you mix everything with the maror, you're going to blunt the taste of the bitterness, which again takes away from the ability to tap in to the difficulty of Egyptian servitude. But now look at the second paragraph. Hillel, however, thought otherwise. Writes Rabbi Sachs, Hillel had a different approach. And out of respect for his opinion, we do as he did as well. Hillel was guided by his understanding of the biblical verse that one should eat the paschal offering with matzos and bitter herbs. suggesting that all three be eaten together. Perhaps, too, he was reminding us of the Jewish experience of history. Within the bitterness of slavery, there was also the hope and promise of freedom. Within freedom, we are also commanded each year never to forget the taste of slavery, so that we should not take liberty for granted, nor forget those who are still afflicted. So writes Rabbi Sacks something amazing. What does Hillel turn around and say to the Rabbanan? So the Rabbanan say, you can't eat everything together, you can't make the rap, because you're negating the taste, and more importantly, you're mixing different experiences. To which Hillel responds, exactly, exactly. That is the point of Korech, says Hillel. We are to remind ourselves that there are moments of matzah, even in the midst of maror. There are moments of redemption, even during difficult times. And we must remember the maror, even when celebrating the matzah. So Hillel says to look at these experiences independently minimizes the impact. Because then what you're saying is there's suffering and there's redemption. Hillel says, that's not the way the Jew views the world. The Jew understands that even in the midst of suffering, there are redemptive moments. There's hope. There is redemption. And even in the midst of redemption, we must still remember our plight and the plight of others who are currently suffering. So says Hillel, what you guys, the point of Mevatlin Zeh, see Hillel just disagrees with the following. He says, you guys think that by mixing it together, you blunt the effects of both processes. That by mixing redemption and slavery together, you don't fully feel slavery and you don't fully feel redemption. Says Hillel, just the opposite. By mixing them together is the only way that you can truly experience both. It's only when you mix matzah and maror together that you realize that even maror, even difficulty, challenge, and setback always has, even if it's just a few crumbs of matzah, and even the redemptive nature of matzah, still has, one has to remember the difficulty of maror. Interestingly enough, in number 6, so that's, again, this is Rabbi Sacks's, we're just using this Rabbi Sacks to understand the Gra. So when they say, when according to the Gra, again, just so we can follow the flow, according to the Gra, according to the Vilna Gaon, the machlokis between Hillel and the Rabbanon is mevatlin zed zed. The Rabbanon say, can't mix them together because they negate one another. So Rabbanon say, therefore, must experience each of them separately. Pesach, matzah, or I should say, matzah, maror, Pesach. According to Hillel, the only way you truly experience these events in their fullest is if you mix them together. Because life is not black and white, right? Suffering is never just suffering. There's always elements of redemption. And redemption always has to carry with it the burden of past and present suffering as well. If you look at number 6, another approach. This is another approach. I'm doing something a little bit unconventional here. If you know a little bit about the Gra, the Vilna Gaon was a staunch opponent of Hasidus. He put the Baal Shem Tov in Cheren. He put the Baal Shem Tov in Cheren because he saw what the Baal... And by the way, historically, he probably did an incredible service for Hasidus because to a certain degree, he forced the Hasidic movement to become a little bit more mainstream, whereas it really could have become incredibly fringe. So he was a staunch opponent of Hasidus. So now we're going to quote in number 6... Rabbi Nachman of Breslov, right? In order to go ahead and understand the Vilna Gaon. So Rabbi Nachman writes the following, a beautiful, beautiful insight. He says, Korech Matzo Mars. Look, Rabbi Nachman again, it's interesting, they're both very similar actually, Rabbi Nachman and the Gra. Both of them write very often in ways that no one understands, right? Rabbi Nachman uses a lot of words, but it's very difficult to really get to the essence of what he's writing. So here it happens a little bit easier, right? It's korech matzo maror. You put the matzo and maror together. Ze bichinas eish umayim. Rabbi Nachman writes that mixing matzo and maror is like mixing fire and water. Yad yomin v'yad smol. It's like mixing the right with the left. Remember, the right represents divine mercy. The left represents divine justice. It's like mixing Hillel u'Shammai, right? So he's bringing examples of polar opposites. Bechinas machlokis l'shem shamayim. Va'al kein Hillel hoya karcham b'yachad. Says Rabbi Nachman. This is exactly why Hillel put everything together. L'horos Shebe'emes Elu V'Elu Divrei Elokim Chayim. So Rabbi Nachman says so beautifully. The Rabbanon say to Hillel, you have to eat Pesach, Matzah, Maror. You have to eat them separately because if you put them all together, Mevatlin Ze'ed, they negate the effect. They will negate the full power of each other if you mix them together. Says Hillel, you have to put them together. Because if you don't put them together, there is a theological danger, which is that people will associate the redemptive nature of Matzah and Pesach with God, and will identify Maror with what? With some other force in the world. Right? God is good, so anything that comes from God must be good, and therefore by definition, when negative things happen, that must be that God's not interested, God's not looking, God's on break, God decided to take a step, whatever it is. Says Hillel, we have an opportunity here to teach the Jews for all generations an incredible lesson in theology. Elu v'elu divrei Elokim chayim. Just like Matzah and Pesach, redemption comes from God, Maror comes from God as well. Suffering, difficulty, challenge, setback also comes from the Ribono Shel Olam. And just like Pesach and Matzah is clearly for our benefit, just like redemption serves the needs of the Am, so too in some way, albeit an incredibly difficult and painful fashion, suffering serves our national needs as well. So says Rabbi Nachman, this is the fundamental dispute that is happening between Hillel and the Rabbanon. The Rabbanon say, let's separate out the processes. Hillel says, no, we must bring them all together because we have to realize that God is not just responsible for the good stuff. God has responsibility for the maror as well. Elu v'elu divrei Elokim chayim. All of these processes are orchestrated by the Ribono Shel Olam. Rav Kook takes this idea one step further in number 7. And he says the following. Korech, he begins really by stating the same idea as Rabbi Nachman. Shnei hakochos halalu. These two forces. He's referring now to matzah and maror. Koach ha'avdus. So remember, Maror represents servitude, slavery. Matzah represents redemption. Tzrichim anachnu lahavinam lo bitur shnei kochos nifradim. You can't understand matzah and maror as emanating from two different sources. Because remember, what is that called? That's called dualism. Right? Dualism is the belief that there's a good God and there's a bad God, right? There's a God, and there's a devil, there's a Satan, there's some other entity that has the ability to do negative things to man, totally out of the jurisdiction of God. Says Rav Kook, that's of course not our theological approach. We have to realize that both matzah and maror all emanate from the same source. She'enam polim zeim ze, they call echad misyache b'miktsoa echad b'chayim. Ultimately, they both come to serve the process of the evolution of our destiny. Kimim shneyem michubarim yachtov. They are connected. Umashlimim zeed ze. And this is a very radical statement. They actually complement each other, writes Rav Kook. And this goes back, by the way, to what we said, we spoke a little bit about last week, about the maschil b'genus u'mesayim b'shabach, this idea that the entire Seder experience is really predicated on this notion of linking the difficulty and challenge along with the redemption. But he goes on, koach hacherus shebematzah maras haskula apinim shel Yisrael li'avas Hashem Yisparach vi'avas toras mitzvosa be'avas shon tiyetivas hu be'atzmo yitein oz v'atzmo lanu v'skarba anatiyas ha'pradu. So Rav Kook then goes on and he adds in one more piece, which is the power of the korech, the power of the rap, he has another dimension. Namely, Rav Kook goes with the idea, and it's not our topic for tonight, we're going to speak about it more on Shabbos HaGadol. He holds that matzah really represents the most purest and most beautiful level of belief. Why? Because if you go with a straight reading of the text, the Jews followed God out into the desert without what? Without provisions. Without provisions. In fact, that's what the Navi says. Zacharti lach chesed ne'urayich, avas kelulosayich, leich teich acharai b'midbar. So HaKadosh Baruch says, and it's such a moving pasuk, you know what I remember most about you Jewish people? You followed me into a wasteland. and you didn't even have bread. You didn't even have bread. So writes Rav Kook, matzah represents this idea of incredible belief. So what do we do, says Rav Kook? We take the matzah and we wrap it around the maror, as if to say, the Jew who has faith, the Jew who has a well-founded and grounded emunah belief, will be able to weather the vicissitudes and difficulty of life. If you have real belief, you will wrap it around your maror, and somehow you will live to see another day. So if we bring this all together, this is our first approach. So remember, just to trace our progression. Approach number one is based on the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon uses one phrase to highlight the machlokes between the Rabbanon and Hillel of Mevatlim Zedze. The Rabbanon say you can't mix them because if you do, they'll negate the effects of one another. Hillel says, no, they won't. How do we understand that gra? Two basic approaches. First approach of Rabbi Sachs. The Rabbanon are saying they represent two different aspects of human existence. They represent redemption and slavery. You can't mix those two. Furthermore, you can't blunt the bitterness of the maror. Hillel says just the opposite. The obligation of the Jew is to remember that there's matzah even in the midst of maror. There's redemption even in the midst of difficulty. And the job of the Jew is to remember the marirus, to remember the bitterness, even when times are good. Rabbi Nachman of Breslov really highlighted this same theme, just using a different phraseology. Elu v'elu divrei Elokim chayim. Hillel says to the Rabbanon, if you break up the processes, you run the risk of creating a system of dualism. Pesach and matzah, that was God. Maror, I don't know, that was fate, that was chance, that was something else. We bring it all together, elu v'elu. As difficult as that is for us to acknowledge, because the truth is, to a certain degree, it's much easier to exonerate God and make Him not responsible for the bad things that happen in life, because then we could continue. It's easier to look at God as a loving God. It's much more difficult to accept the fact that the Ribono Shel Olam is responsible for the negative things that occur as well, because then we have to question the relationship. Says Rabbi Nachman, that's what we do in Judaism. We question things. We don't ignore the questions. We don't sweep the questions under the rug. We might not have answers, but we still question. And then we sort of cook, who echoed the same sentiment as Rabbi Nachman, but added on one additional idea, matzah representing belief, the purest, most beautiful, most humble belief. Hillel says, wrap that matzah around that maror. If you want to know how to survive the difficulties of life, if you are grounded, if you are rooted in a beautiful and pure belief, that will help you weather the maror of experience. Take a look now at number 8. We come to a second approach. This is from a new Haggadah that just came out this year by Rabbi Doctor, with the commentary of Rabbi Doctor Norman Lam, who's the Chancellor of Yeshiva University. So Rabbi Lam writes something amazing. He says the following, a very, very, also a very unconventional approach. He says, it's a little bit long, but as I always say, a lot of his words are much better than anything I could convey to you in mine. So in number 8, Hayakorich Matzu Marva Ochal Biachot. In this age of polarization, it is important to point out the danger of too much of a good thing. What I plead for is that in any moral or ethical problem, and life is full of them at every turn, we consider all values, both during and after the choice between competing values. Any one value, when taken to an extreme, can be corrupted. If we consider all positive values together, even if we must choose one over the other, there is less chance of debasing ourselves, our lives, our society. Second paragraph in number 8, here is the best line. We need a dialectic of virtues, a harmonization of competing goods. We need freedom and responsibility, peace and self-defense, love and morality, patience and toughness, discipline and independent thinking. Like Hillel, who would make a sandwich of matzah and the bitter herbs and eat them together, we must manage to combine two different mitzvos, one bland and the other bitter, and not overdo either one at the total expense of the other. One more paragraph. Jewish life today must reveal that idea of balance, of not overdoing things, of a Seder that comes to an end with the Afikomen. So Rabbi Lam understands the Afikomen, meaning the Afikomen now is without the Maror, represents religious perfectionism. is a good thing. It means insistence upon more Torah, more observance of commandments, more morality. But religious perfectionism overdone could lead to isolationism, the kind that characterizes too much of orthodoxy today. This is too much of a good thing, and we are warned not to be too much of a tzaddik. At the same time, tolerance and understanding and acceptance of those of different opinions are certainly virtuous. Without tolerance, society crumbles. But done to an extreme, these will lead to indifferentism, to deciding that it makes no difference what you believe, what you practice, what you want to do. This leads to a breakdown of Judaism. Instead, we must have a dialectic of various virtues, an equilibrium between them, not going too far in either direction. A very powerful yisod. So says, and this also, by the way, links back to what we learned last week. If you remember, again, we spoke about the idea that part of the concept of maschil beginusu mesayim b'sheva, part of the reason why we start with the low parts of Jewish history is because, as Rav Soloveitchik and others pointed out, the problem with spending a night celebrating your newfound freedom is what? It can go to your head a little bit. Too much freedom is not good also. Freedom is only good when it is peppered with restraint, when it is peppered with responsibility. So we pointed out last week, Rav Soloveitchik points out, that on our first night of freedom, we weren't painting the town red. I mean, we were painting the doorposts red, right? But that was about it. And the rest of our first night of freedom was spent indoors eating dinner with the family. Not exactly how slaves throughout history have celebrated their first night of freedom. Why? Because Judaism believes in balance. Judaism believes, again, to borrow Rabbi Lam's beautiful phraseology, Judaism believes in the dialectic of various virtues. The Jew has to learn how to create a synthesis, a synthesis of equilibrium, a synthesis of all different things. So therefore, Hillel says, so whereas the Rabbanon say, in the Rabbanon's model, what do you have? You have matzah, maror, pesach. Or in other words, you have absolute experiences. First, I'm going to experience freedom. Then I'm going to experience servitude. Then I'm going to go back and experience freedom again. Hillel says, according to Rabbi Lam, That's not the proper approach. You never should experience any one thing in an absolute vacuum, because life, again, is that dialectic of various virtues. Life is about creating the synthesis. Therefore, says Hillel, remember, what we do at the Seder is much more than just reliving or recreating that which happened. What we do for the Seder, and this will be, I was going to say it's our topic for next week, maybe for next year, right? What we do at the Seder is really create a paradigm for effective living. That's what happens at the Leil HaSeder, a paradigm for effective living. Says Rabbi Lam, therefore Hillel says, wrap everything together, creating that balance, creating that equilibrium. Let's look at one more approach. Number 9. So this is from the Haggadah of the Beis Halevi. So again, I put a little, I did put a little biography here on the bottom of the page. So the Beis Halevi, Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, the namesake of the Rav, but in fact the Rav's great-grandfather. So he writes the following. Issa b'Medrash, again he's commenting on the Korech process. Issa b'Medrash, he quotes an amazing Medrash from Eicha Rabba. The Medrash quotes a pasuk from Eicha, the Book of Lamentations, which we read on the 9th of Av. So if you look first, just skip for a moment to number 10. The pasuk that he quotes is, Hisbi'ani bamrorim, hirvani la'ana. God has filled me with, bless you, God has filled me with bitterness. He has sated me with wormwood. With wormwood. So writes the Beis Halevi, back up in number 9, first wide line. Hisbiani bamrorim, hirvani la'ana. Mashi hisbiani bamrorim, belele pesach. Hirvani la'ana, belel tisha ba'av. So the Gemara says, the Medrash says, that the two parts of the verse refer to two different dates. Hisbiani bamrorim, God, you have filled me with bitterness. That refers to the night of the Seder. That refers to Leil Pesach, when we go ahead and we partake of the Maror. Hirvani la'ana, you have sated me with wormwood, says the Medrash. That refers to the night of Tisha B'Av. So says the Medrash, goes on, Deleil tes ba'av chali olam belaila shechal bo Pesach. Because as we know, the 9th of Av always falls out on the same night of the week as the first Seder. as the first Seder. In fact, again, according to at least one approach, that's why we have the Beitza, right? That's why we have the charred Beitza on the Seder plate. So some say it comes to represent the charred egg on the Seder plate. Some say that comes to represent the Karban Chagiga, one of the offerings that was given for Yom Tov. And another opinion says, no, actually the charred egg represents the loss of the temple, the loss of the Beis HaMikdash. So because the night of the first Seder is the night of Tisha B'Av. So he goes on, Ulchora, Ein shum nafka mina b'masha shahani shnei leilos, chalim b'layla echad b'shvua. So he writes the following. So as the Beis HaLevi, excuse me, who cares? Meaning, what's the connection between the first night of the Seder and between the night of Tisha B'Av? In fact, if anything, they seem to be polar opposite experiences. Right, the night of the Seder, if you could categorize it with one word, what is it?
Freedom.
Let's try that again. If you could, right? Give you the what? We'll do hangman. Is that good? You know, it's all right? Right? It's one word. Hope. Hope. The essence of the Seder is hope. The essence of the Seder is that life is wonderful. And even if it's not so wonderful now, it can be wonderful in the future. How do you categorize Tisha B'Av? Despair. Well said. Desperate. It's not even mourning. It's not even mourning. Because the truth is, we mourn a lot of times in life. But you could mourn, but still have hope. Tisha B'Av is desperation. Tisha B'Av is, there is no hope. In fact, Rav Soloveitchik points out that, interestingly enough, we know that on Tisha B'Av morning, we don't say Slichos. Normally, again, on a fast day, you have a whole litany of additional prayers, of Slichos, special supplicatory prayers. We don't say Avinu Malkeinu. Why? Because, says the Rav, we are so devoid of any hope. There's no, when you only pray when you feel like you have a chance of getting your prayers answered, when you feel like there's someone to listen to you. On Tisha B'Av, we feel so distanced from God that we don't even do the normal prayers of fast day. So ask the Beis HaLevi, if you could pick two nights out of the calendar that would be further, that could be, you couldn't pick 2 days on the Jewish calendar that are further apart than the night of Pesach and the night of Tishba. But he goes on. Ubar kochenu de'ikar omek kavanas chachamenu zal, dahani shnei leilos tzluyim u'mikusharim zebazeh v'ha'echad garam nechadera. Says the Beis HaLevi, it must be, however, if the Medrash is linking them, that there is some common denominator, there is some spiritual link between these two nights. Skip to paragraph C. He says, u'bedarach hadrush, efshar lomar, the Pesach dino lihios nechal ala sova umevuar, or skip the internet, v'yish lomar kavana bazeh, v'balayla zeh osim zikaron lebeiz dvarim mufachim. If you think about the Seder, right, the Beis HaLevi, we really commemorate two opposite things. Yesh bo dvarim zecher lecherus, kimo Pesach u'matzah, v'yesh bo dvarim zecher leshibud, kimo moror v'charoses. It's really interesting. We have conflicting, contradictory themes at the Leil Seder. On one hand, we have Pesach and we have Matzah, excuse me, and Karban Pesach, which represents freedom. But yet we have Maror and Charoses, right? The Charoses is that what's supposed to the mortar-like mixture, which are to symbolize again our servitude. V'humishum, listen to this. V'humishum debalayla ze hayu mishubadim. V'gam nigalu balayla ze mishibudam. V'tzarich lios tam Pesach nishar bepiv lohoros. I'm sorry, just lost the place. Lohoros shemikan ve'elich hiskel acherus. V'chol ze nechel rabbanon dahayu ochlim matzu umaror ve'achar pach achar kacha Pesach lechuda. So it says basically something amazing. If we think about the night of the Seder, which was the night, our last night in Egypt, so were we free or were we enslaved that night?
Both.
Both. Right? At the initial part of the evening, we were still servants. We weren't being actively persecuted like we were for the previous 200 years, but we were still the property of Paro. Again, Paro certainly had, the Egyptians really had been broken down much, but we were still the slave nation to the Egyptians. But that same night, we also experienced freedom. So right, that basically is something amazing. On one night, we experienced servitude and freedom. So the Rabbanon, the rabbis give expression to this. What do? We eat, what do we eat first?
Matzah.
Why do we eat matzah first? Because this night was the beginning of our freedom. But what do we do right after we eat the matzah? Right? We eat the maror. Why? Because we're still enslaved. Because remember, on that night in Egypt, as much as we ate the matzah, which was really, again, almost like a little bit of a taste of what was to come, and reminiscent of the fact that we had already begun to experience some level of freedom, we then immediately afterwards eat maror, because we're not totally free. We're not totally free. But what's the last thing you eat? Is the Karban Pesach. And the halacha is that you're supposed to leave the Seder with tam, we say tam matzah, but it's tam Pesach. The last thing we ate when we had a temple, when we will Amir Tashem have a Beis HaMikdash, was the Karban Pesach. You have to go to sleep with that taste in your mouth. And you can't eat any, like we do the Afikomen, you don't eat anything after it. Nothing after Karban Pesach. Why? To symbolize the newfound enduring freedom. So therefore the rabbis write, you have to eat them separately. You have to eat matzah, because this is the beginning of freedom, but then we have to eat maror, because we're not free yet. But then you eat Pesach, because we become free, and that taste remains in my mouth, symbolizing the enduring, ongoing freedom. Look by paragraph D. Aval Hillel hayakorech Pesach matzah umaror. Hillel, on the other hand, what did he do? He wrapped it all together. V'nimtza v'lididei hayukulam ne'echolam ala sova. Ulchora, mashayich b'maror lios ne'echal ala sova, delamalo lios nishar tamo b'fiv, v'hayimariros shalashibut kvar chalof, v'averbo v'einenu od ne'ata. See, here's what's interesting. According to Hillel, the last thing you ate was this wrap, right? Which means that when you went to bed that night, what taste did you have in your mouth? You had some maror also. So whereas according to the Rabbanim, you go to sleep with just the beautiful roasted taste of freedom in your mouth, according to Hillel, you went to sleep with a little bit of a bitter aftertaste. Why? Look what he writes. He says, Rakevan dehaya az be'emtza hazman v'chol ha'geula haya asmach zeh sheyihiyu od begalus acher mishum hachi Sorech shiyehye nishar ta'amo b'fiv. Says Hillel something amazing. To go ahead and just celebrate Pesach, celebrate the Exodus as a redemptive be-all, end-all, says Hillel, would be delusional. Because as we know, there has been much suffering, difficulty, and challenge in the aftermath of the Exodus. So says Hillel, and again we've seen this theme in many different ways, in order for any kind of experience to be impactful, it has to be real. It has to speak to people in their current situation. Is there any one of us who knows what pure, untampered, enduring freedom feels like? And the answer is no. Because we all have our problems, some of us big, some of us small. We all have our different challenges. So we could appreciate redemption, but we don't know of a pure redemption. Everything that we know in life, even if it's redemptive, is always sprinkled with a little bit of maror. So says Hillel, if the Leil HaSeder is going to be a meaningful experience, then it has to be a real experience. Then we have to celebrate our redemption by also acknowledging what? That there are difficulties. That there have been difficulties, and chances are there will be difficulties. Now that's okay. We can weather that storm because we know that just as God redeemed our forefathers, He will redeem us as well. But on the night when we celebrate our redemption, in order to make that celebration real and rooted in our personal and national reality, we must acknowledge the bitterness of existence. We must acknowledge that it's not the pshat that we left Mitzrayim and everyone lived happily ever after, like we saw last week. That's a myth. That's a myth. Happily ever afters do not exist in the real world. Certainly, the story ends, we lived happily for a while, right? And then there was difficulty. But then there was more happily. But then there was more and that's the cyclical nature of life. Therefore, says Hillel, to go to sleep just with the Tam Pesach, to go to sleep with the redemptive taste of the Paschal Lamb in your mouth, all by itself, Hillel says, is delusional, is not real. And if you're not rooted in reality, you're going to have a very difficult time dealing with the challenges and setbacks of life. Therefore, says Hillel, I want you to taste the Pesach, but I also want you to go to sleep. I want you to take leave of the Seder with a little tinge, not a lot, but a little tinge of bitterness, just to know that, yes, There is difficulty, there is sadness, there is bitterness, but we have a belief that ultimately we will be redeemed from our personal and from our national problems. And he goes on, and he says, that's the pshat. Last two lines in letter D. V'zehu shedarshu mashish b'yan b'yan. Now we understand the medrash. If there are two nights that are incredibly linked, which two nights would they be? It's going to be the Leil HaSeder and Tisha B'Av. Because it's on the Leil HaSeder that we don't do it overtly, because we don't want to take away from the simcha, from the celebration. But even if it's in a subtle, nuanced fashion, we have to somehow link the night of greatest jubilation to the night of greatest sorrow. Because that is the nature of human existence. That is the way life works. It's not a bad thing. It's just a thing. It's just the way that it is. And those who choose to delude themselves into thinking that it's not true suffer even more in the end. So Hillel says, I want everyone to have a real Pesach experience. But a real Pesach experience means peppering the redemption with a little bit of bitterness. The real Pesach experience means celebrating Pesach, but also remembering Tisha B'Av. One last approach for tonight. The last approach, interestingly enough, is not based as much on what Hillel said, but more on who Hillel was. If you take a look at number 11, perhaps the most famous. Well, I guess there are a lot of famous stories and statements of Hillel, but one of the most famous statements is Hillel Havi Omer. This is from Pirkei Avos. So in Ethics of Our Fathers, Hillel said the following, Hevi mitalmidov shel Aaron, be of the disciples of Aaron, of Aaron, the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, the brother of Moshe. Why? What was unique about Aaron? Ohev shalom, he was a lover of peace. Rodev shalom, a pursuer of peace. Ohev eshabrios, a lover of people. Umikarvan la Torah, and he brought them closer to Torah. Interestingly enough, you know, the Maral comments on this, and he says it doesn't just say that Aaron was a lover of peace; he was a pursuer of peace. So the Maral writes so beautifully. He says, truth is, everybody loves peace. I mean, normal people love peace, but most people find it difficult to be a pursuer of peace. Why? Because pursuer of peace often requires what? Work, and perhaps more difficult, a little bit of self-negation. Sometimes being a lover of peace, I should say a pursuer of peace, means apologizing for things that you don't really feel you should apologize for. Sometimes being a pursuer of peace means swallowing your pride, because bolstering your ego is less important than fostering bonds between people. That was Aaron HaKohen. To be a lover of peace is easy. To put your colloquial money where your mouth is and actually engage in a little bit of self-negation to attain that, that's Aaron HaKohen. So look what Rav Kook in his commentary on the Haggadah number 12 writes an amazing idea. He says, and this is so beautiful, Zecher l'mikdash kehillel. Zecher l'mikdash kehillel. Midoso shel Hillel. What was the attribute of Hillel, says Rav Kook? Ha'ohev v'harodev shalom. Who was Hillel? Hillel was a lover and a pursuer of peace. Ha'ohev esabrios. He loved people, a general concern for people. Umekarvan l'Torah. And he was so concerned for people that he brought people back to Torah. Why? Not for any kind of benefit for him, not for his own stature, for his own position, but because he loved people so much that he wanted them to have the best out of life. He says, Tashuv eleinu, shalom nidaber el kol pzurenu umafligosenu, v'or ha-geula haba yachad im zikarna pesach v'hamatza, simani hacherus, yam tiklanu es rishmei hamerirus shel hagolus, umachovea haruchanem v'acharmiyim. So says Rav Kook, a little bit, again, not exactly pshat, but says a beautiful yisod. He says, what Hillel is advising us to do by the Leil HaSeder is very much in line with Hillel's character. What is Hillel telling us to do? Think of in the image, right? What is Hillel telling you to do in the Gemara? Telling us to be inclusive. He's telling us to come together. Al matzos umirorim yochlu. Ochlan k'vekarchan k'echad. Remember, the symbolism also of the wrap is so beautiful. Hillel says, you know what? If we're going to make it through this difficult thing called life, we can't be fractured. We can't be a fractured people. We can't be a divisive people. We can't be a people who argue over every single petty thing. If we're going to make it through the difficulties, like we just learned before, if we're going to make it through the maror of life, the only way to do that is karchan ke'echad, is to come together. This is the same Hillel who said, Hevi mitamidav shel Aaron, Ohev shalom, Rodev shalom. So Hillel says the only way to weather the challenges of life is for us to come together. Why? Here's the beauty of it. You see, not everybody possesses matzah emuna, and not everybody possesses maror suffering, and not everybody possesses, you know, succulent carbon Pesach redemption. Right? Everyone has something different. So here's the problem. I only have one of those three. And if I have to go through life alone, how am I going to make it? So says Rav Kook, says Hillel so beautifully, if we combine, you know, the Chafetz Chaim says this vart on Borei Nefashos. We say, in the Bracha Achrona, Borei Nefashos Rabos, God creates many souls, v'chesronam. What does chesronam mean? And their deficiencies. So says the Chafetz Chaim, that's how we praise God. It's like saying, oh, dinner was great, but use different ingredients next time, right? It was wonderful. Hey, what kind of backhanded compliment is that? You create many souls. Because says the Chafetz Chaim, it's a bracha that God created us deficient. Why? Because that ensures that we understand that no man is an island. Because He created us deficient, by definition, we need others. There is no one person in this world who is self-sustaining. Even great Moshe Rabbeinu. Remember when Am Yisrael builds the egel? They build the golden calf. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe Rabbeinu two words. What are the two words? Lech Reid. Which is a nice way of saying, excuse me, get out of here. Get out of here. Moshe Rabbeinu abandoned his family. He left normal life to be with you guys. Come to get out of here. And the answer is, because Moshe, if the people aren't going to exist, I don't need you anymore. You are not important, Moshe, as an independent entity. You are important vis-a-vis your relationship with the Am. And if there's no Am, if there's no people, because I'm ready to destroy them because of the golden calf, Moshe, I'm sorry to tell you, consider this notice, right? I don't need you anymore. We need each other. Says Rav Kook so beautifully, that's the essence of Korech. And here's what's really amazing. If you think about it, Korech is the end of the Magid section of the Haggadah. Right? Remember, we go from Korech to what? To the meal. Right? To the meal. So really, Magid is the pivotal anchor section of the Seder night experience. So says Rav Kook, we've spent the whole time, the last couple of hours, reliving the Exodus, telling different insights, explaining every different thing. And how do we end off? The Karchan Yachad. At the end of the day, it's not about me. At the end of the day, it's about us. Because each and every one of us brings something to the table. Some of us have the suffering and can't find the belief. Some of us have the belief and Baruch Hashem don't have the suffering. Some of us have experienced the beautiful taste of redemption, but we all come together. When you roll it up into a nice, beautiful wrap, then suddenly what I lack, I'm able to find in you. And what you lack, you're able to find in me. So we go ahead and we end the Magid section with the statement and the affirmation that true success in the coming year, true success in our lives, doesn't hinge really on what we could do as individuals, but it hinges on what we could do as a collective. Yes, Michael.
Korosis itself, why is there not more of an explanation of korosis in the Seder?
Because it's not
It's true. So that has to do with the fact that the truth is, in its purest form, charosis actually is not symbolic. We attribute a symbolism to it later on. In fact, the original use for charosis was the Gemara explained that there was a type of worm or some kind of insect that used to live in the lettuce, and the charosis has actually, which is a little bit scary about charosis, charosis has the ability to somehow kill it. I don't know what that tells us about us if we eat charosis, but well, don't eat the stuff you get in the mail, that's for sure. Right? But so that's why we only later on attach symbolism to it. That's the answer. Yes?
Could I share experience with you and everybody here for my first ride on it? I was born a Gentile. I was born on basic shame. And it was a second chance. My first Orthodox Seder, I was married to a Jewish person who didn't know me do anything. And our usual Seder with family was just finished at 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock and everyone went home. my first Orthodox saying, I didn't know what was going on. I was totally confused. And when there was the length of time that was amazing to me. When we got to
to me also.
When we got to the measured matzah and also the herbs, I started eating it, and I literally felt, this wasn't happening physically, my head being pressed into dust and sand. Now, I'm a spiritually sensitive individual, right? And I was pressed into it. It was like in my mouth, in my eyes, in my ears. And it was like a terrible, terrible experience. And there was no spirituality, literally the 49th level. There was no spirituality. It went on forever and ever and ever, hundreds of years. And I came out of it totally shocked. And I looked at my wife and said, did you feel it? She's a Jew. She said, what are you talking about? We're here till the morning. And I said, can you feel it? I looked around, everybody around the table, expecting them to have gone through what I went through. And nobody appeared to have experienced it. So what I came away with was the bitterness. I always thought it was the matzah. I came away with a bitterness, and the overriding thing was never, never, never let it happen again. Never. You must never, I said, Bev, you must never, never let this happen again. So what is a personal experience? It's never happened to me since. I wasn't a Jew then. It happened to Jew 3 years later. It was in my conversion process. So what was I picking up? I was over.
You have to put me on the spot like that. I mean, I could read your palm also if you'd like. I could. I don't know. That's amazing. Well, there is.
That's a message for me.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. My Jewish Neshama, obviously.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
My second chance.
That's amazing.
Obviously, it didn't do it
right.
The first time or whatever. But the overriding thing was you never let it happen again because it was terrible.
That's amazing.
I'm eating this. I never had it again, but I think how awful that 49th level was. And the freedom of being along, reach this hand down and pull this out, that was the drama of that freedom. It was a dramatic experience.
That's amazing.
It wasn't just, it was like, boom.
That's amazing. Beautiful. All right, so I want to conclude just by taking the opportunity to wish everyone a Chag Kasher V'Sameach. We should take the opportunity over the next week and a half or so to prepare for the Seder, because we spend a lot of time preparing our kitchens, and we spend a lot of time cleaning out the refrigerator, and we spend a lot of time vacuuming and dusting and doing everything else, and sometimes we neglect to do the most important preparation, which is the spiritual preparation for this incredible day. We get the opportunity to do a Seder once a year. And look, just from two shiurim, we only got to focus on two things this year. We see the incredible, almost life-changing, life-altering power that the Seder has. So whether it's things that we've learned, or take the next week and a half to try to learn a little bit more, choose a particular Haggadah that speaks to you. There are so many wonderful Haggadahs out there. Pick something up or take something off your bookshelf that speaks to you, even if it's 5 minutes a day. But the preparation that we do for this night could yield such incredible dividends. And let us hope that Emir Tzashem, when we get to Korech this year, that let this be the year that we no longer have to say Zecher leMikdash. Let us hope that Emir Tzashem, we no longer have to remember what was done in the Beis HaMikdash. We should be Zochet to see it with our own eyes with the rebuilding of the third Beis HaMikdash. Mihra b'yameinu. Amen.
When did the matzah get hard?
When did the... I don't know. I don't... That's a good shaila. I'm not sure... I don't know. But I'll tell you, Sfardim... Sfardim...